Welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of the Placeholder Podcast. I am Kaylee Fritz. I'm joined today by my good friends Dane Cash and Ian Treloar. How are you both? You good? Can you give me a podcast thumbs up?
I'll go even further to say that I was doing well before the intro, but now that you've called me a good friend, man, that really makes my night.
That is not
You are a good friend, Dane.
Thanks, Kaylee.
Dane, you're like one of the original placeholders. If people go back on this feed,
yeah.
If they go all the way back in this feed, they can listen to us be really sad after I get laid off.
I remember getting a text. I was in Belize on vacation, and I got a message from you, and I was like, whoa, things are going down. And then I was holding places very soon after that.
Were you in a state of disbelief?
I was. I think I was like on a kayak in the ocean and there was like a shark nearby. So I was worried about far different things than this podcast, I have to say. But yeah, it was disbelieving. Yeah.
There were sharks in both of our waters.
There we go.
There were sharks in both of our waters. No, you're all good friends. And I'm happy to have you back on today's episode. Today, we got a lot to get into. We're going to break some news, actually. I don't know we're breaking it. Are we breaking it, Ian? Are we breaking news?
Well, I think we're breaking it outside of a couple of small publications in Rwanda, so I can't imagine our readers have come across it before.
Okay, well, I still, you know, credit where credit is due to a couple small publications in Rwanda. They got this first, but we're going to bring you some fascinating and somewhat disturbing and somewhat unfortunate news coming out of Rwanda, which remember that they are hosting the World Championships in 2 years. We also have a Jumbo Visma doping positive. We're calling this Bummer Corner in the sort of first third of the show here. And then we've got the unfortunate news that EF Education TIBCO is sort of officially disbanded. Again, more in the Bummer Corner. We're also going to chat a little bit about some CO2 numbers that are popped up on Strava. The Tour de l'Avenir is on right now, specifically the men's Tour de l'Avenir. There's also the first ever women's Tour de l'Avenir this year. We're gonna pick our favorite, because last year we picked our favorite, and then he got a pro contract like right afterward. So obviously we have the golden touch. We'll get to that at the end of the show. Let's kick off, though, with a thank you, as we are wont to do. We'd like to thank our lifetime members, Jason Taylor, Seth Sternberg, Guy Stewart, Michael Boucher, and Elizabeth, we think, Angel Macias, and Chris Prattley. Thank you all for being lifetime members of Escape Collective. You're the best. We really appreciate all the support. If you are not already a member, head over to escapecollective.com/join. And go sign up. Thank you very much. Let's get into the show. Okay, Ian. So, like I said, we're gonna kind of start with Bummer Corner this week. We've got a couple different news items to run through here. This is the biggest, and it's the biggest, even though I don't think we've actually seen it anywhere else in the cycling world. But for anybody sort of concerned with the sport and specifically the 2025 Road World Championships, we have some concerning developments out of Rwanda. Fill us in.
Yeah, so troubling times in Rwandan cycling at the moment. The news that broke yesterday is that, or overnight, so it's quite hot off the presses in Rwanda, is that the Rwandan Cycling Federation, FERWASI is what they're called, is under scrutiny from the Rwanda Investigation Bureau, specifically two key figures, the organization's Secretary General, who's a guy called Benoit Munyankindi, and the president of the Federation, Abdallah Morenzi. So there is allegations that Munyankindi engaged in favoritism, forgery, and falsification of documents. There are a couple of different elements to this. The first being related to the most recent World Championships in Glasgow, where he used his position allegedly to secure a visa for his wife to attend as part of the Rwandan delegation, even though she had no official role there. The allegations around Morenzi, the president, is that he knew about it but took no action, apparently, according to the Rwanda Investigation Bureau. The other implication for Munyankindi, or other allegation around Munyankindi, is that according to Team Africa Rising, who are a US and UK group led by Kimberly Coates and Jock Boyer, who helped develop cycling in Rwanda in the 90s after the genocide, 90s and 2000s. Apparently Munyankindi had pulled similar tricks when he was involved with the country's first continental cycling team, Benediction Ignite, sending invoices which weren't official invoices and were for things that were never purchased, is the allegation. Adding further complications to that is the fact that both Munyankindi and Murenzi were brought in 2019 after the entire Rwandan Cycling Federation's executive committee resigned en masse after another corruption brouhaha, with allegations that the president at the time, Aimable Bayingana, used his connections and influence to organize shipments of personal items over from Italy and all sorts of dodgy dealings like that, and also pretty horrible allegations that they turned a blind eye to repeated sexual abuse of female riders. So these guys now were supposed to be the sort of fresh face of Rwandan cycling and help usher the country into the 2025 World Championship cycle. But that doesn't seem to have been going all that well. It's troubling in a sort of sports governance perspective, which is interesting to me, but it's also troubling because Rwandan cycling has been declining for a number of years. It used to be seen as one of the sort of leading shining lights of cycling on the African continent. As of the most recent continental rankings, there's no Rwandan rider in the top 25 on the African continental rankings on the UCI website. So Eritrea, South Africa, Ethiopia, other countries have outstripped it, and Rwanda's fifth or sixth best country in Africa for cycling at the moment. Which is a problem. But there's another bigger problem, which is that the organizer of the Tour of Rwanda, who's a French guy called Olivier Grandjean, in April left the Tour of Rwanda in quite fiery circumstances, published a pretty scathing letter, which we obtained a copy of, and said that the power syndrome and jealousy of one of his colleagues that was working on the race with him prevented him from being able to continue his work on the race. And the problem about him leaving the Tour of Rwanda is that he's also the guy in charge of the logistics and delivering the 2025 Road Worlds. So a couple of years out, the local organizing committee doesn't have staff, expertise, route logistics, technical services, radio, photo finish equipment, motorcycle riders, public relations, representation and advice, because this guy took all of it with him. So I would say that Rwandan cycling is in a uniquely troubled position with its big showcase event coming up pretty soon.
Ian, I want to clarify, is he no longer involved not only with the Tour of Rwanda, but also with the World Championships as well? Has he pulled out of assisting that as well?
He's pulled out of both.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
So I think the next Tour of Rwanda will be interesting, but what it... I assume that the Rwandan Cycling Federation, or what is currently operational of it, with the top two guys currently under investigation, are searching pretty hard for a new event provider to be able to allow that event to continue. But the tour, beyond the Tour of Rwanda, it's also the Road Worlds. It's a pretty big deal and not a good sign.
Is there any danger of that Road Worlds not being able to happen? Or is that purely speculation at this point?
No, I imagine that they'll find a way to make it happen. I think that it's too big an item, and the government is too invested in it to allow it not to happen. So I'm sure they're searching for solutions, but it is it doesn't bode well for it being a well-organized, well-oiled event at this point.
I'm struck by the fact that the folks brought in to sort of fix the corruption are now getting swept up in some similar, very similar, actually, allegations.
It seems like a step up from what Ian described as the last administration, at least. The words Ian used to describe the previous administration, to me, seem to be on another level of bad. So, you know, I don't want to paint them with the same brush based on what we've just heard. These guys seem a little bit better than completely, what Ian said about the last guys.
Yeah, I think that they are an improvement. It sounds like they're an improvement. The previous president, Aimable Bayangana, was quite closely aligned with Paul Kagame. He's a member of who's the current president. He's a member of the leading party. So I think that there were close ties between the government and the cycling federation, which probably don't exist now to the same extent. But I also think that there were attempts made to build Rwandan cycling to a point where it was this internationally credible force in the space, and hosting the World Championships, which was one of Bayangana's last kind of big initiatives, was a big part of that. So, yeah, I don't really know whether Morenzi and Muyankindi are trying to be as overtly corrupt, or whether it's just something they found themselves stumbling into. I don't know. Or
Judge. I stumbled into this corruption.
Yeah, although I don't know.
Please be lenient. I was just walking along.
Just riding along.
Just riding along. And they're just... corruption just jumped out in front of me. I couldn't do a thing. I couldn't do anything about
alleged
it.
Alleged corruption.
Yeah, sorry.
And an interesting side note of that is that whilst Muyankindi was organising his wife to attend Glasgow Road Worlds, I've heard that riders on the junior national team... only had their flights organized to arrive in the UK to arrive the day before, missed their connecting flight, didn't get any assistance from the Rwandan Cycling Federation to make their way up to Glasgow. And then the Rwandan embassy, kind of out of pity, paid for a 7-hour taxi ride for them up to Glasgow, where they arrived just before their race. So this year, all of the Rwandan riders at the 2023 World Championships failed to finish. And with that kind of preparation and support, maybe that shows why.
My next question was going to be, you mentioned the fact that sort of the nation as an athletic entity within cycling has been slipping behind some other nations and in the region, and my question was going to be why, but I think you kind of just answered that a little bit with it sounds like, you know, these things require pushing from the bottom. Right, but they also require support from the top. That tends to be the way that development needs to happen. And it sounds like the top has been pretty, allegedly corrupt, which is not a good place to be, and not a good, you know, if you're trying to get juniors to world championships and you can't get them more than a day in advance, like, yeah, not to, maybe that answers my question without having to say too much more on it. I don't know.
I think that there's also
is there anything else going on?
There's a little bit of an us and them kind of divide where I think that Rwandan cycling wants to stand on its own two feet, which means that they're kind of pushing away Western actors in the space and trying to discredit people like Team Africa Rising, who were really heavily involved in developing Rwandan cycling in the first place. But the side effect of that is if the Rwandan cycling institutions aren't capable of developing the riders to get to a point where they can be competitive, like the last Rwandan rider on a world tour team was Adrian Niyanshuti, and that was way back in 2018. So there hasn't been anything since then. One rider, I think, that has made it to pro continental level, and that fell apart. So the continental level riders aren't working at a level which allows them to get through to the next stage. And then meanwhile, other countries are improving: Eritrea, South Africa, Algeria, and they're coming to Tour of Rwanda, which is kind of the home race and the showcase event for those Rwandan cyclists, a chance for them to shine, and they're not able to shine there, which means that they're not able to get those contracts, which means that they're not able to go to the next level. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling kind of issue at this point. But with World Championships coming up in a couple of years, in the view of Team Africa Rising's CEO, that they don't feel confident that there's going to be a single Rwandan rider that's going to be able to finish the race, which is kind of a pretty scathing indictment of the situation in the country.
Well, that's all troubling, and we'll keep an eye on it, obviously. I believe you said, Ian, that you're wrapping up a story on this, well, sort of as we are recording this podcast, just ahead of this podcast. So by the time you get this, there should be a whole story on escapecollective.com that dives into it in much more detail. So go check that out. Now, also in our bummer corner here at the beginning of the show here, we've got news from Jumbo Visma, and a doping positive from Jumbo Visma. 22-year-old German Mikkel Hessmann has returned a positive test for a banned diuretic in an out-of-competition test that took place in mid-June. We've got a big sort of long contextualization of this up on the site that Joe Lindsay wrote. But it's worth just mentioning and chatting about it on this podcast as well, because you know, it's the first doping positive for a team that is the dominant team of right now. There's some sort of strange things about this particular result, this positive test. The biggest of which is that it was announced essentially kind of ahead of time, ahead of anybody else, by the team itself, by Jumbo-Visma. The suspension, a suspension of any sort, is not on WADA's list, it's not on the UCI's list. It's just all we've got at the moment is Jumbo-Visma saying that one of its riders has tested positive. There's actually no sort of governing body or doping body that has told us this. So that's a bit weird in and of itself. But yeah, like what else do we know about this case, Dane? And what do you feel like it might tell us or not?
There's a number of reasons why this is a big story. So first of all, it's Jumbo-Visma. Kaylee, as you said, this is the team of the moment. They just won the Tour de France. They won the Giro d'Italia. And as we talked about on the pretty serious bike racing podcast this week, and as we may talk about here on this very show, they are the favorite team. They have the two favorites to win the Vuelta as well. So this is a big team. And this is not just any big team. It's a team that has not had a positive test in quite some time, ever since they've been known as Jumbo-Visma. And even before that, the team has been cleaner, certainly, at least from an outward perspective.
let's take this one back.
Yeah.
So cleaner is a relative
right
thing.
Yes.
Because this team, prior to being Jumbo-Visma, prior to being Blanco for a brief period of time, was Rabobank.
Yes, Rabobank, which, not the cleanest of teams.
Not the cleanest of teams. Many, many positive doping tests. Many, you know, Michael Rasmussen, who wanders around the Tour de France press room these days with his yellow bike still. He has admitted to doping while on that team. I believe it was Rasmussen who said that. Was it Rasmussen who said that the team had butter on their heads? Do you guys remember this line?
I don't, but I immediately want to know everything about it.
I believe it was he was quoting Geert Leinders.
So he was quoting Geert Leinders. The phrase was meant to mean that the team's doping positives would run right off them. It was a glorious analogy. Essentially what he was saying is they were protected by the UCI. Allegedly. Also worth noting, just since we're noting things, Geert Leinders worked for Team Sky for a little while.
Also worth noting, he's been banned for life. So
has been, yes, banned for life. Has been banned for life. Did not get banned for life in anything related to his work with Team Sky, but was a doctor with Team Sky for a number of years in the sort of early times of the Sky dominance. Anyway, I thought it's that bit of context of the team feels worth mentioning at this particular point in time. It is also worth, we should say that like pretty much the entirety of the sort of I don't know, executive class of Rabobank was removed and has been gone for quite some time. And Richard Pluga, who now runs the team, he was installed in 2013, 2012. Do some Googling for me. I'm just pulling this out of my brain.
Just
sometime around there, right around the Blanco era. Again, since he has been running this program, he's been running this team, this is their first, I think, positive of any sort. Am I right in that?
I believe that is accurate. I do not think they have had a positive since Pluga took over, since the Blanco years. Aside, but the Blanco kit is one of my favorite kits that has ever existed. It's like depressing because the kit existed because Rabobank said too much doping. We want no longer to be involved with this. But I do love that kit. Anyway, I don't think they've had
but they were still paying.
They were still paying. That's right.
That's part. So Rabobank was like, we want to be dissociated with cycling so badly that we are going to like just hand you $20 million, but we actually don't want our name anywhere near
that's
you.
That's right. But since then, I think you're accurate in saying they have not had a positive since then. When Pluga took over, since then the team has avoided those negative headlines. Technically, we still haven't heard the UCI officially say that. But apparently, according to the team, we're probably going to hear this pretty soon, that Hesman tested positive for a diuretic. If you are not somebody who knows a ton about putting banned substances into your body, typically diuretics, they're sometimes used for weight loss purposes, but a lot of times they're used to mask doping, other doping substances. That's the big reason that a lot of them are banned. And this is across sports, by the way. There are a lot of diuretics in baseball. You use a diuretic so that nobody notices that you are also taking something else. Unclear exactly what Hesman was testing positive for, because this has not been announced by WADA. The team got ahead of it by announcing this information. The fact that this team has been outwardly, squeaky clean for so long, it has not had any doping positives for so long, this is a big part of that story. The other thing is that Hesman himself is a talented rider. This isn't just some guy. Well, first of all, he's on Jumbo, so like basically nobody on that team is some guy. He was third at the Tour de l'Avenir last year.
One ahead of Archie Ryan. Does this move Archie into the podium? Our man
Well,
Archie?
I don't think it will, because I think the substance was last year. I mean, it was not last year. If the substance had been from last year, maybe.
It was just hopeful. That's all I was. I was just hopeful for our man Archie.
Yeah, so this is a talented rider. So for this 22-year-old to be testing positive for a diuretic, not a good look for him, not a good look for the team, and it's a bad time, I think. Jumbovis was having a great year, and then kind of out of the blue, because it's been so long since the last time this team had any kind of doping related stories, we get this, and it's not great.
An interesting comment on Joe's article was that was from a German reader, and their comment was essentially that this is a really bad thing for cycling in Germany, because after the T-Mobile era and German cycling and Milram and Gerald Steiner, after all of those, German cycling really took a backward step and was not particularly well represented at the top level. A lot of German races folded. So for those kind of ghosts of the past to come up again it's not great news for Germany.
Same weekend as one of their two World Tour races too. I mean, if you're a fan of cycling in Germany, you kind of can't catch a break. And then of course you had it was mostly Austrian riders, but there were a number of German people, sports people in general, involved with the Erfurt doping ring from a few years ago. It's just not been a great run of years.
At the risk of sounding like kind of an idiot later, can I just provide my personal opinion on this particular doping positive?
You're the boss. We're not going to tell you no.
You're allowed to if I'm about to do something stupid, Dane. Okay, so... So, like you said, diuretics were sort of very commonly used to mask other things. They're also quite easy to detect, and they're a lot easier to detect than they used to be. And essentially, the testing has gotten a lot more sensitive than it once was. And the reason why diuretics were so effective before is because they could essentially like serve to kind of dilute things. And so if you needed, you know, 10 parts per million to test positive for, I don't know, testosterone, I'm making these numbers up just to be clear, you know, they would help you get below 10. And then maybe if you only had 7, then you were fine. And now the testing is such that they can spot 1 and be confident in that, right? 1 part per million. Again, made up numbers, just for illustrative purposes. So like diuretics don't really help as much as they used to. This is according to a couple different folks that I've spoken to over the last 2 or 3 years on this subject. They're also quite commonly accidental ingestions. Like that happens relatively frequently, where you know, probably at least a dozen or so have been determined to be accidental in the last like half decade, and a lot of those are diuretics. So my gut says that's what this is, and it sucks. You know, Tunerts this week also got sort of the final, like his final suspension, basically. For anybody who recalls, this was a similar case where they found a very small amount of something, and he maintains to this day that it was ingested accidentally. Problem is, you know, the burden of proof is on the athlete. It's sort of the opposite of the regular justice system here. And he basically had to go find a closed bottle of some like protein powder that had the substance in it, and he was unable to do that, and so therefore he gets suspended. But he maintains to this day that he has essentially fallen afoul of the exact same thing. I think this is actually relatively common these days because the testing is so good. The problem if you're an athlete is doping is not run, like I said, like the justice system. It is run under the concept of strict liability, where it doesn't matter at the end of the day whether you did it on purpose. If it is in your body, you're responsible for it. And so, unfortunately, it means that, you know, playing around with supplements and things like that is a dangerous game. And my gut says that that's what this particular thing was. You know, we can clip this up and play it for me when it turns out that he was masking something terrible. But that seems like the most likely thing at this point. Particularly for a rider of that particular stature and status. That's just what my gut says at this right now.
I'd like to point out that I personally follow the Usain Bolt model when it comes to ingesting substances, which is eat McDonald's, because I know no matter where I am in the world, it's the same. And I won't have these issues.
No tainted beef for Dane.
So you're welcome, McDonald's free advertising.
I think it's kind of reassuring that even if there are these instances where people might get incorrectly pinged for things that they ingest accidentally, the fact that they're getting pinged at all is positive, and that testing has improved to a point where those kind of transgressions are picked up, or accidental ingestions. And one of the instances that I think of, which is quite bad for the athlete involved, but good in terms of cycling's transparency, is the fact that earlier this year, the UCI vice president, Katarina Nash, was caught for a banned substance, which she was able to prove was the result of giving that substance to her sick dog, which later died. And it was sounds like a very terrible time for her, because not only is she going through the process of having to prove her innocence, but she's also dealing with a dying pet. But I think it is good that those things are coming out, good that high-profile people like this guy from Jumbo Visma or the UCI vice president are being announced as having been caught. And then good if there is an avenue for those people to prove themselves as not having broken the rules if they haven't.
So sort of two follow-up points on that. One, the Katarina Nash is a perfect example of like how sensitive the testing is now. The fact that you can test positive for something that you just gave to your dog because you came in contact with it. Like that's how sensitive this stuff is. And it's why I think we see a lot of these they're not false positives because the substance is there, right? But they are accidental. And you know, generally the suspension is either lessened or eliminated entirely in those cases. The other thing is if Jumbo Visma is announcing this on their own, then the butter is no longer on their heads. And I think that we can, as you say, Ian, we can take that as a positive. We can take that as a good thing for the sport that, you know, this exact team 15 years ago was so positive.
You keep saying positive.
I keep using it in different ways too. Was so confident that they wouldn't test positive for anything because they felt that they were protected by the UCI. That, you know, that the doctor was telling this to riders, right? That we had butter on our heads. That same team is now releasing the fact that one of the riders tested positive before we even get it from the anti-doping authorities. And so, yeah, if you sort of just look at the trajectory there, I think that is a good thing. I don't think any of us are going to sit here and say, trust all of cycling, trust Jumbo Visma. No. But yeah, this particular case, the fact that it's been, I think, handled interestingly, but maybe well, we'll see, by Jumbo Visma itself. It's in general a positive story for cycling, even though it is also a positive, which is a negative. Anyway, we should move on. Let's take a little break. Leave a bummer corner behind, with the exception of the unfortunate news that EF Education TIBCO has officially folded. This is Linda Jackson's team. It is not EF Education Cannondale, which just started. Quite confusing. If you want to know more about that, Dane, discussed on Wheel Talk this week, right?
That is correct. Abby is following the story. It's a pretty confusing story, so you should go listen to Wheel Talk. Two different teams that EF is involved in the sponsorship of. One is going away. One is brand new. And they have a number of... There's some overlapping riders as well.
Lots of overlapping riders, in fact. Yeah, complicated story, so go check out the full discussion on Wheel Talk. And another place you should head over to is if you want a big Vuelta a España preview. If you, for example, want to join our fantasy game, which has just kicked off Tuesday, I believe it kicked off, which you should do, because if you beat me, you get this podcast for free. Congratulations. Head over to escapecollective.com and you can go find our fantasy game, our Vuelta fantasy game. If, for example, you want to know who might win, what the stages look like, all the rest, head over to the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think that's a great idea. You should do that. You should listen to the Pretty Serious Bike Racing. Also, you could read the preview that I'm about to write. Yeah, basically just follow all of the things that I do, and you'll learn more about the Vuelta.
Lots of Vuelta coming. We got a bit of an announcement here for you all. We saved member number one. So every single member of Escape Collective, you all have a number. When you log in, it says it up at the top. And it's roughly in line with how quickly you signed up. So, you know, the super fans out there, you got a nice low number. Congratulations. But we wanted to save member number one because, well, we just think member number one is a cool thing. And basically what we want to do is we want to kind of pass it around to folks that have helped us in some way, who can help Escape Collective grow, for example. And this year, I am very pleased to announce that longtime professional cyclist, friend of the podcast, friend of Escape Collective, Richie Port, is our member number one for 2023. Now, of course, we're most of the way through 2023. Richie seems to be okay with this. But yeah, we're really excited to have him as our member number one. We'll have another one next year, and that'll be a fun process, I think, every single year. We also chatted with Richie. Actually, Matt Deneef chatted with Richie, and so let's hear that.
Then I remember chatting with Wade, because Wade was, you know, a guy that I kept in touch with. Mm-hmm. And then he was telling me, you know, borrow a line off ABC here in Australia, independent journalism. Mm. But then when he told me his idea, and then when it all sort of started, and I just love that. I love the stories, not just the results. I really like the stories, and you know, like what Johnny Long's doing, and like Ian is such a brilliant investigative journalist, and I love that he sort of sticks it to the UCI every now and then. It's just, it's a fantastic website. When Wade asked me that, it was almost embarrassingly humbling to be given, you know. And I've got like my Fixo jumper and with the number one, you know. It's it is nice to stay up to date with the sport, but not have the, you know, full blown blow race breakdown. I like that, you know, there's this brilliant stories in there as well.
Thanks to Richie Port for being our member number one in our first year of existence. Again, I think this is going to be a fun thing going down the line, finding somebody to sort of represent what we stand for here at Escape Collective, somebody who can help us grow the thing and just be sort of our number one cheerleader, I think is the whole idea. Huge thanks to Richie for being our member number one in 2023. All right, got a funny little side story here that we wanted to talk about because we think it's interesting. So recently, Strava added a feature. We wrote about a story about that. Actually, Jace Dupuis wrote a story about this last week. They added a feature where if you mark a ride as a commute, it calculates the amount of CO2 you have saved. Now, obviously, this is a guesstimate, really. I think it comes from an EPA paper, and so, you know, there is science behind it, but it's really just an estimate. And the idea is just to sort of like give you an idea, a rough idea. Okay, well, I rode my bike to the grocery store, I didn't drive my car, what did I do? What did I save? So, like, for example, this morning I rode my bicycle and dropped my daughter off at her grandparents' house, and I saved 0.75 kilograms of CO2. It was a 2.13-mile bicycle ride. Actually, no, that was only one direction. I did that twice. So actually, 1.5 kilograms of CO2, according to Strava. Now, the reason we wanted to mention this is because there's a fair amount of kind of chatter, both in the comment section of this story and on our Discord, which, by the way, if you're a member, you get to hang out on our Discord and chat about these sort of things with us. And some people for it, some people against it. And I wanted to get the take from you two. Like, is this cool? Is this like just, you know, another way for people with expensive e-bikes to like feel good about themselves? What is this thing?
This is absolutely cool. I don't see the downside. It encourages, like, people look at their rides. They say, oh, I'm doing something good. Hopefully it encourages them to ride their bikes more. How is this not good? This is great.
I think part of the problem one of the undercurrents I detected from that comments thread was that people were mostly annoyed that commutes were being published in their Strava feeds, so they just didn't want to see somebody making the same journey from here to there and back again over and over again, because it diluted what they get from Strava. But I think for an individual and for motivation and for the fact that it highlights that people are actually paying attention to things like global warming, it's only a good thing.
Yeah, it has to be, right? I did a quick calculation, and just commutes on our cargo bike, which is not the only bike that I commute on either, and saved something near 2,000 kilograms of CO2 in the last 2 years.
That's pretty cool.
2,000, which is like a European flight.
That's awesome.
Which also shows you how terrible a transatlantic flight is from the United States. But it took me 2 years to undo my trip to the Tour de France with a bucket bike. It's basically what I'm saying.
With a much higher smile per mile count.
Much higher smile per mile, indeed. Anyway, I just thought this was interesting. It's worth mentioning. I like it when, you know, we see things like Strava kind of innovate in these really tiny ways that actually potentially could have a pretty big impact. And Jason, his story, he had a couple, I think, great ideas that I hope Strava will start to implement. Like, I think a leaderboard of CO2 saved is actually kind of fun. I'm the kind of person that can kind of get competitive about almost anything. And so maybe that gets a bit dangerous. And then maybe you end up with some things like some of our commenters are pointing out that, you know, people just start marking their weekend rides as commutes and things like that. Fine. Like, if people want to do that and they want to compete that badly, then go for it. I would just like to, like, have it track it over time for me and keep track. Like, you know, I had to do this sort of the math on my own for the cargo bike, right? And if it would just sort of keep track of it in the same way that it keeps track of my miles and my hours and my altitude gained and things like that, it's just another way for a sort of numbers-driven society and a competitive society. And I think it kind of taps into a bit of human nature, which is really what is the strength of Strava to begin with, is it taps into this sort of like weird desire to compete with each other, even when we can't even see each other, right? It taps into that and does so with, I think, a positive end result, hopefully. I can't really see too much of a downside here. But anyway, just thought it was worth highlighting. We liked it. Last kind of major segment of the day here. We're halfway through the men's, I was going to say boys, but it's really men's. They're like under 23s, 20-year-old men. Men's Tour de l'Avenir, of course, the Tour of the Future is what that translates to in French. This is, of course, the biggest Espoir U23 race on the calendar. And the winner of this race usually goes on to, like, win major races at some point in the next few years. Quite often goes on to win the Tour de France. And so, worth paying attention to. We're not going to sort of talk too much about the results in this show. One, it's not over yet. Two, there's a women's race for the first time ever that we're going to dive into a bit more in next week's episode. But I did want to mention the fact that, you know, our golden touch basically is entirely responsible for Archie Ryan getting his first World Tour contract with EF Education. Now, for anybody who listened to a certain other podcast last year around this time, you will know what I'm talking about, which is we picked pretty much at random somebody off of the Tour de l'Avenir start list. That was Archie Ryan. We cheered for him. We told our listeners to cheer for him. Somebody went out and, like, made a sign on the side of the road that was one of our listeners at the Tour de l'Avenir. That was cool. We demand that you do this again. And then Archie Ryan got fourth at the Tour de l'Avenir. And he ended up with, he actually just recently signed with EF Education Easy Post. So congrats to Archie, first and foremost. You're welcome as well. We did everything we could. So we need to pick a guy for this race. And we have two options. I sorted the start list by age. Our two youngest riders, these are our two options. Our two youngest riders are, and they have two excellent names, so this is going to be a difficult decision here. We have Diego Pescador, which, as Dane pointed out, and I had guessed already, means Diego Fisherman, or fish.
Yeah.
Fisher, yeah. Guy. Fisher.
He's a fisher. He fishes for things.
He's a fish guy. Much like Jonas Vingegaard. And then our other option is all, I'm definitely saying this wrong, but it's the more fun way to say it, is Slovenian, 18-year-old Slovenian, All Jazz Turk.
Is there any other choice than the Turk train?
No. Nope. Oh, sorry, are there any more other riders?
I mean, there are more than two riders in the race. I do understand how this works, Kaylee. It would be quite a bad race if there wasn't.
Diego Pescador or All Jazz Turk? You're saying that All Jazz is a solid,
yeah, Turk,
like, easy winner there?
Absolutely.
I'd like to point out that as of recording time, Mr. Turk is already, like, near the very, very bottom of the standing. So he's going to need some kind of fast turnaround, really, to
he's to number rise one in our
well, occasion.
He hasn't gotten the placeholder's bump yet. And that's really our fault. It's really our fault for not having done this last week. So All Jazz, we apologize. But I guess Algez is our guy. And I think he's also the youngest rider in the race. He is 18 years and 240 days old as of recording.
He's a very nice-looking young man as well.
Right?
Yeah.
He just looks like a sweetheart.
He seems happy to be there, wherever that is.
Yeah.
Even if it is 143rd in the GC.
Rides for the Continental team, Adria Mobile. Soon to be riding for a World Tour team. Probably just alongside Tadej Pogacar at UAE.
I'm a little bit offended that out of the entire start list, you have chosen those two people and not Lars Kraps on Belgium.
His name is Lars Kraps and he rides for Belgium, right? His name is not Lars Kraps on Belgium. Is
that, sorry, is that Lars Kraps of Belgium, Lars Kraps.
Yeah.
I mean, do we need to make a last-minute swap here?
It's a good name.
That's a great name.
But does he need our help?
I think he's probably been bullied for most of his life.
Yeah, but he finished like in the top 10 at the Tour Alsace this year. He was like, you know, does he need a... This thing with Diego Pescador, he just won a race in Colombia. Whereas I think Mr. Turk actually might need the bump, you know? So he might need our assistance. Needs
the bump. And he's full of jazz.
Old jazz.
He's all jazz.
All jazz all the time.
All right. All jazz Turk. If any of our listeners are out there and you're going to see the Tour de l'Avenir for whatever reason, you better have a sign and we want to see it on television, please. All right. Well, congratulations to... It could be like all jazz.
It might be
how do we do that? We don't have our chief Slovenian correspondent on this episode to ask, but I will text Kate and I'll find out for next episode how we say this.
Aljaž, I think.
Aljaž?
It's like Primož. The same thing as Primož.
Yeah.
Okay. So his actual name is Aljaž Turk, and we're rooting for you, Aljaž. Your name in English looks like all jazz, and we like that. And so congratulations on getting the placeholder bump. We expect to see you. What place is he in as of today, Ian?
Pretty sure it's 143.
He is 143rd place. If we don't see at least 130s by the end of this race, I'm going to be deeply disappointed.
He's not last. There are 152 riders in the race, so he's doing good. He's got room to move in both directions.
Should we do some daily pain, weekly pain? All right, it's time. As is our tradition of 2 weeks, it is time for your weekly pain, gentlemen. Kit has 1 point, and I am keeping track. Dane, 0 points. Ian, do you have any? You guys tied the first one?
I think it was
tied. Nobody got any points?
Yeah, I believe that is
okay,
correct.
So it's 1-0-0 at this point in time. The game remains the same this week. I have another game up my sleeve, but I'm going to hold off one more week. We've got a couple more good ones here. So the game is, of course, you must name for me all of the teams that a particular rider has ridden for. Any pro team, so any like continental and above team counts. Changing just like sponsor names, that does not count. However, whatever is on my list is final. So my failures extend out into the game and are potentially your problem. So are the rules understood, Dane?
Yes.
Dane? Okay. We're ready to go?
Ready.
Who wants to go first? Who's going first?
Dane has taken on quite a sort of menacing air in this segment. I think his competitive streak has come in. He's leaning into the microphone. He's sort
I
of
am
looking down.
Like, that's true.
He's kind of looking out of the upper third of his eyes at me. It's kind of a glower. He's smiling now, but he wasn't before.
I think it's just that my last two appearances ended with a tie and a loss. So I'm like, I need this win.
Got to bring it back.
And yet, I already know that it's going to be a really hard one, so...
Well, and I have bad news for you, Dane. I am going to let you go first because our first rider is the Stavanger Stallion, Alexander Kristoff.
This seems extremely biased towards our chief Norwegian correspondent, but I'll go first, sure.
Okay, hit me.
Katusha.
Yes.
UAE Team Emirates.
Correct.
Uno X.
He is there right now. You are correct.
Intermarché Wanty Circus or Goubert, depending on what sponsor it was that year.
Gobert Mathieu, Ian, and that was well done because he was only there for 1 year.
That was my four. That's it. I have no.
So I need to come up with one to.
You need to come
it.
Up with
So Ian,
with
you
one.
Did say UAE. We've said Intermarché. We've said
we've got
Uno X.
So you have the last four teams.
Yeah. All right.
Done already.
Well, I don't feel so.
However,
bad.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 left.
There are 5 left.
I'm going.
What?
I'm going. There are 4 pro teams and 1 club team, but it has a great
club
name.
Teams
so I'm
don't
adding
count.
It to the list. You don't need it anyway. You only need one more.
Oh, this is really hard, Caleb.
Well, let me throw out a guess because I don't want to go out without even guessing. But yeah.
Yeah. Yes. You can chuck a guess.
Okay. And there are 4 actual pro. This is not a club team. These are like legit teams.
There are 1, 2, 3 Conti teams and 1 World Tour team.
Okay, there was 1 World Tour team before Katusha.
Yes.
Which is when I remember him coming into existence. He came into existence for me at Katusha. He was born.
Just arrived, fully
born. He was born in Katusha kit. Oh, man. Well, I feel like I can at least, you know, have a 1 in 20 chance of just naming a World Tour team from like 2011. BMC.
Yes.
Yes.
So now I'm down to like shit kicker Norwegian continental teams.
Yeah.
And trying to salvage this on my home round.
Yep.
Oh.
But if you don't get one, then Dana's
getting
another
one. I still
one,
have to get it, right? Isn't that how this works? Like, I have to guess it, so...
I think we maybe need to remove that.
I think we probably do, but I don't...
Because otherwise, we just end up with no points ever.
But we didn't say that before this round.
Nope, as the official judge, I have removed that rule, so...
Now, even after I won it on the last round.
This is a dictatorship.
I'd like to point out, this happened to me last week, Ian, so...
Okay, all right.
We're figuring out these rules as we go. Whatever works, you know? All right, so Ian, you have to name one, or else Dane gets the point.
I will take a wild stab at a Norwegian continental team that has been around for a while, and I'm hoping that they've been around for long enough. Co-op.
Nope. I'm very sorry, Ian. In your home round, the remaining correct answers were Team Joker Bianchi.
Joker!
Max Bo Bianchi. Possibly the same team. Don't know, actually. And I can't believe you didn't get this one. Glued and Marstrand Horsens.
Sorry, was that a question?
In 2006. And then in 2005, Stavanger Cycle Club.
That is absolutely not an answer. That's just a club. It's just a club.
He still wrote for it. All right. Well,
Joker's a legit team. They were like a real... That's a thing. That's a real thing.
This is going to be a hard one, actually. This one... So this is a best of three situation. If Dane takes this one, it is game over.
And Ian goes first here, I'm assuming. Is that how
Ian goes first? Oh, there's several rounds. Okay.
Yeah,
all right, I'm still in. This is good.
It is best of three. I have a couple options here. I don't think you're going to get any of those. Here we go. This is a fun one. Damiano Caruso.
Friendly, business-friendly Bahrain.
That is correct. That is where he is currently riding.
I mean, I literally don't know who is on before Bahrain. I mean, he's been around long enough that I should know. This is not somebody who like is far back when I wasn't following cycling.
So this game is semi stolen from a great podcast called The Football Ramble, and they run. They have like an audio clip that is like I think it's like 5 or 6 seconds long, and they can hit play, and it basically means you have 5 or 6 seconds left.
Yeah.
So we will develop that.
Yes.
It's still in the development pipeline. So for now, I just start singing.
Okay, I vaguely remember Damiano Caruso wearing red. So I'm going to say Katusha again. Tell me at least he rode for a team that is reddish.
He rode for BMC. which oh, is great.
That was what I was going to say.
Of course. Yes. That's who we
wrote for. It's 1-1. Remember, Dane, how you said you wanted this to be shorter than last time?
Yeah, it's very short. You're welcome.
It's really not particularly short. Bahrain Victorious, BMC, Cannondale, Leaky Gas Cannondale, which is the same thing.
Oh, of course.
DeRosa Stack Plastic and LPR Brakes Farnese Vini. Some of the like really early ones and all these guys are kind of my favorite. You, like, you just get these really random Conti teams that I've never heard of. All right. For all the marbles, for 100% of the marbles, Rigoberto Urán. Dane, you start.
I want to be tactical. Ian taught me to be tactical in the first game.
Which you just take the easy ones first, right?
Right. I think that's I think that's the approach. You hold back the ones that maybe. So yeah, sure. Let's say EF.
Correct.
Sky.
Correct.
Well, I was vaguely hoping that Ian wouldn't remember all those years ago that he wrote for Quickstep.
Correct.
Oh no.
Two World Tour teams and one Pro Conti team left.
Ugh. This is very hard. Colombia, like the Colombian continental team that has Colombia in the name.
Wah, wah.
Ah, oh, well done, Dane.
Ah, thank
Dane
you.
Dane gets the point, gets all the marbles, gets the big point that goes week to week. You are on the board.
Nice.
Congratulations, Dane. Do you have any guesses? Do you remember any other Rigoberto Urán teams?
So I actually don't.
He rode for Case Tapania, was his major team.
That's right.
He rode in 2007 for Unibet.com, which is a team with a big question mark on the kit, if you remember, because they weren't allowed to put Unibet on kits. That's fun. And then he turned pro in 2006 with 10X Salmelano.
How about that?
Don't know anything about that team. It's Italian. He raced with Fabio Baldato. I don't recognize any of the other names. David McPartland, who is Australian. I don't know anything else about David, but raced on the same team as Rigoberto Urán in 2006. Well, like I said, congratulations, Dane. That was a huge, I wouldn't say it was an upset, but it was a commanding victory.
Thank you.
Ian, better luck next time.
Thank you.
I think it's time for us to wrap up for the day. We've gone quite long. We really need to figure out how to shorten up the weekly pain a little bit, but we'll figure it out. I hope you enjoyed. We'll be back next week with another episode of Placeholders. In the meantime, go check out Wheel Talk, go check out Pretty Serious Bike Racing for the Vuelta preview, go check out this week's Geek Warning, and we'll see you next week. Bye bye.
See ya.